Hi, I'm Jayant Sriram and welcome to In Focus, the Hindu's analysis podcast. Thanks for joining us. We are recording on the 4th of May and officially today the third phase of the lockdown has kicked in, with relaxations coming into place in several areas. Simultaneously, the government has also announced plans to bring back Indians stranded abroad. So cumulatively, that gives us a lot to discuss today. I'll start on the latter point with Suhasini Haider, the Hindu's National and Diplomatic Affairs Editor, who joins me first on the show today. Suhasini, tell me, let's talk about first about the government's announcement today and how this is going to progress.
Well, it's certainly going to be a welcome announcement for thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of Indians who are stranded in different parts of the world. But the truth is, Jayant, it's going to be a massive exercise. The government has announced that it will begin a phased return of distressed Indian citizens. They will be brought back in the next few weeks, basically by commercial aircraft and by ships. And the government is making it very clear that they will have to pay their way. They will also have to, when they reach, agree to being quarantined for 14 days, pay for the quarantine facilities as well as the hospital facilities if those are needed. So this is going to start from May the 7th, from what we understand. Sources have told us that they already have a sort of plan for about 60-odd flights, 60 to 65 flights that are expected to come in over the first week. Now, remember, details still have to be ironed out in terms of how many passengers can actually go on each flight, given social distancing norms and all the rest of that. But what the government says it has put out is a standard operating procedure, an SOP, including all the protocols for how they will bring people back. From what we understand of these flights, at least half of those flights will actually be coming from the Gulf. Earlier, we had heard that the government would only actually begin by bringing people back from the Gulf. But the good news for those in other parts of the world is that along with six countries of the Gulf, UAE, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Kuwait, and Oman, we are going to see passengers being brought in from the US, from the UK, from Singapore, Malaysia, Philippines, and Bangladesh. Now, they are not going to fly all into hubs in India. They will fly actually directly to 10 separate states. Of course, Kerala, Tamil Nadu, and the Delhi NCR are going to see the largest number of flights because that's where the largest numbers of migrant workers and populations are. And remember, it's not just the flights. The naval ships are being put into place, particularly to bring back migrant labor from the Gulf region. So we will see a mix of those being used. We understand prioritization has already taken place to some extent, with embassies saying who really needs to come back, who has the health issues, the personal emergencies, and has been away, you know, at a time when they couldn't manage to, they need to be with their families. We also understand that women will be given priorities on the flights, and pregnant women will be given the top priority. I think the naval ships will be used for men, essentially migrant labor coming from these six countries in the Gulf. We do expect to see that a large number of those will be flying, as I said, to Kerala. In fact, the first few flights, I think, will be going directly from places like the UAE and Qatar and Riyadh to Kozhikode and Kochi. So that's where the government is at this moment. The planning has been done. It will be announced in the next couple of days, and they expect to start the first flights from May the 7th.
Okay. And as you mentioned, Suhasini, this is on a payment basis, right? This first batch of flights. Any idea how much these flights are going to cost? Are they going to be very expensive to take for people stranded abroad?
Well, right now, Jayant, it isn't very clear which will be the planes that will be used. Obviously, we expect that Air India will do the bulk of the flying. How much they will pay is going to be decided, I think, according to each of the destinations they are going to come from. But it is being made very clear by the government. Remember, there is this entire controversy about migrant labor in Maharashtra, Gujarat, and Karnataka being made to pay for the special Shramik trains that were put into place in the last couple of days. And there's been this controversy about whether the government should have actually charged them. The government saying that some of it went to the state governments and it wasn't really taken by them. But the real fact is that given that kind of backlash that the government faced for bringing migrant labor and making them pay for their way, I suppose it would be difficult for the government to actually allow people to come from abroad without in some way paying. It's still unlikely that they will be charged on the naval ships as they come back. But it remains to be seen. You know, these are unprecedented times, and the government has kept its cards very close to its chest, you know, till the last minute, until the government's order actually came out. The press release came out saying that they had agreed to bring Indians back. We spoke to several people in embassies, people who had spoken to embassy officials who actually said we have got no orders as of now. Even the Ministry of Defense says we have got all our ships on standby. In particular, I think the INS Jalashwa has been prepared, as well as a bunch of vessels, a few vessels, what are called LSTs, have been prepared to bring people back. But they don't really know what the plan is going to be for traveling to the Gulf until they actually get their final orders. So it's been planned by officials in three or four ministries and kept fairly you know, close to their chest, as I said, until they're able to announce that they can bring people back. Embassies have been asking to register those who are returning. And Jayant, I can tell you, one embassy like the UAE has already received about 2 lakh people registering and saying that they wish to return to India. Not all of them really need to be back urgently. Some of them may just need to come between jobs. Some of them may have actually finished their assignments and require to return home. But given those numbers and given the fact that the Kerala government expects in all about 5 lakh migrants to return, we understand already registrations have crossed more than a million if you look at the worldwide figure. These are going to be very large numbers, and this entire operation is certainly not going to be a short one. It will last weeks, if not months.
Yeah, today's announcement was, the circular issued was by the Home Ministry, which I think kind of focused a lot on what the states need to do in terms of quarantining and screening people as they come in. Is the External Affairs Ministry expected to take the lead going forward, or is this or is it going to be on an embassy to embassy basis?
Well, the Ministry of External Affairs is coordinating much of the effort, but when it comes to actually boarding people and deciding who is going to get on, that will be done by the embassies. In addition, in terms of the SOPs, everybody who gets on, and this is actually important, maybe I should have said it earlier, Jen, that no COVID patients or nobody who's even symptomatic will be allowed to board any of these planes or ships. And they will be screened. They will be screened medically at the airport when they come to board. And after that, they will have to follow the procedures on board when they return to their destination, whether it's Ahmedabad or Kochi or even Srinagar has a few flights coming in. They will then have to download the Arogya Setu app, which we have spoken about in the past. So that's mandatory for anyone returning from abroad. They will have to download the app. Then they will be screened again. And if they need to go to a hospital, they will go there. But otherwise, they go to an institution, a quarantine institution for 2 weeks, for 14 days, at the end of which they will be administered a COVID test. So clearly, state governments have been told to expect these numbers and been told to prepare arrangements accordingly, in terms of doctors at the airport, in terms of beds at the hospital, as well as the quarantine facilities.
And Jacob, before we will discuss what happened at the health ministry and at the briefing and discuss a little bit about the numbers. But just before we get to that, you've reported on a rather interesting story today about the number, the statewide breakup of the numbers and how they coincide with other illnesses, particularly swine flu.
It's a swine.
Just explain that more.
So basically, very early on, you know, when Corona, SARS-CoV-2 was, just in the horizon of India and, you know, mostly in the West, you know, went beyond China, there was a lot of scientific discussion about what similarity does it bear to the seasonal flu. And, there was a debate because it had similar modes of action. It was infecting the lungs. It was highly transmittable, and infection was via droplets. So, but you know, a distinction became apparent very early on because this belonged to an entire new family of viruses. I mean, this is a coronavirus we're talking about, whereas the swine flu virus is an influenza virus. They are the H1 type, or you know, which is a completely different family. But now I was just looking at data that is maintained by the National Centers for Disease Control, and this is India's health ministry arm that looks at disease surveillance. They file weekly reports of spikes in any kind of disease outbreak in any part of the country. They have a very vast, extensive network across the country. So far, it's emerged that when you look at data from at least 5 years, from 2015 to 2019, when H1N1 cases have been closely tracked in this country, it's emerged that Maharashtra, Gujarat, Rajasthan, Delhi, and Tamil Nadu, they account for pretty much most of the cases of swine flu in this country. And every year there are different peaks. 2017 was an intense H1N1 year when there was there were literally 30,000 cases. And again, Maharashtra and Gujarat were led with the maximum number of cases. In 2015, also was a spike, and that showed nearly 42,000 cases. And again, Maharashtra, Rajasthan, Gujarat, Delhi, they were responsible for about 60% of the swine flu, or now it's called seasonal flu death, so to say. So okay. It's always these three or four states that have always made up the bulk of swine flu cases. And now when we see the COVID breakup in this country, it's again Maharashtra, Gujarat, Rajasthan, Delhi, and Tamil Nadu that account for 70% of confirmed COVID cases. In that, Maharashtra and Gujarat bear a disproportionately high burden of cases. And so it's interesting that given that these are viruses of entirely two different families, in terms of spread, in terms of containment, even though this is the first time in history that we ever had a lockdown of this scale, but on the other hand, the patterns seem to be very similar. Even though COVID was first detected in Kerala, it was the first state with the outbreak, Kerala has never really had a significant role in terms of swine flu outbreaks. And, and Kerala, it's the first day, I believe, where there have been no new cases reported today. And so it's pretty much, and the curve has been declining for quite some time. Not so in many other cases, any other states, but Maharashtra and Gujarat continue to be the problematic cases where, the rise is unabated, and even though these are states that have an active surveillance detection system. So it's really not clear, what these trends have to, say for the future. But, you can raise some questions as to if these 5-6 states were the ones that are, particularly susceptible, then could we have done a better job of containment in these 4 or 5 states? Or should surveillance have been stepped up in these 4 or 5 states more than any other many other states in this state? So again, I hope this invites more discussion and more experts, start to look at this. It could also be just due to migration patterns, because these are states that employ a lot of migrant labor, and there's a lot of travel back and forth between these states. So again, which again brings to the whole migrant labor question, as we have been discussing and witnessing for the past 3 or 4 days, as to whether this was the optimal strategy for migrant labor per se. So I think this just throws up more new questions, as an ongoing pandemic always does. And it's only the future that will actually throw more light on these issues.
So I guess it's time to get to the numbers now. So, as we are emerging out of the lockdown, we have, I think, seen reporting from the past 2 days indicating that the numbers have been surging by the thousand. It's just that today there were some very worrying scenes, which I suppose you would expect when lockdowns ease and shops open. Now, we saw some particularly bad scenes from liquor stores around the country. Long queues in Andhra and Delhi, where some shops had to close down after reopening, just because people were stuffed into these closed spaces and queues where social distancing norms kind of went out the window. So that's just a prelude. But where do we stand now in terms of the numbers? Because the big concern was that post-lockdown, we would see a surge.
So the surge has been happening for a long time now. I mean, it's the third or fourth day on a trot that we are posting more than between 2,000 to 2,500 cases a day. We are again reporting about 83 confirmed deaths, every day. So there has been no let up in that trend. Our recoveries also have, the health ministry said that we have a recovery rate of 27% today, which they claim is the highest in that we have seen so far, which is good news. But we are also seeing a rise in numbers. And, you know, we are now nearly 42,000 cases as of today. And if you look at it globally, India is now among the top 10 countries in terms of COVID burden. We are also the country which is number 9 in terms of tests. We have crossed more than a million tests 2 days before. But again, as a proportion of population, this still remains quite low. So there are we are among the 3 or 4 countries in the 40,000s. There are about 10 countries that are 50,000 plus. So in that sense, yes, India is very much a prominent driver of infections, and there does not seem to be any let up in terms of cases. But what we are seeing in terms of easing the lockdown, etc., again, the lockdown is fairly stringently imposed in the containment zones. And red, orange, green, yes, that's one kind of classification. But most of the liquor easings that we saw were in places which were in non-containment zones. So, again, if there have been any explosions of cases, as you know, I mean, Tamil Nadu, I believe, recorded 500 odd cases today, but because of certain market areas. But again, these would be cases that that are patterns from 7 or 8 days ago that we are now seeing. So any liquor effect, as we would see, you know, if at all it's there, you know, would be apparent only after 8 or 9 days, provided you know these testings happen. But 8 or 9 days is when, you know, we would be again close to the end of lockdown 3. And remember that, you know, officials in the government have actually previously shown projections that show a decline in new cases by the end of May 17, which is now widely discredited, because I last heard that, you know, those particular slides are no longer being alluded to. So we don't know what's going to happen. But again, as the Home Ministry has said, you know, districts, containment zones, etc., are going to be monitored on a weekly basis based on their performance in the last 21 or 28 days. So you're going to, ideally, we should be seeing districts go from containment to red or red to orange. But alternatively, we're also going to be seeing cases where districts might be coming up into different kind of categories. I mean, because there's a lot of labor moving in from one place to the other. So will infections rise in hitherto places that we have not seen? But again, that will again come down to the quality of testing or, you know, whether these infections are actively being captured by surveillance systems. So there's still a very, very long way to go.
Yeah, no, it does sound like it. I think there are also going to be some confusing times along the way, I think.
Truly,
So Jacob, thanks for joining me on this first day of lockdown 3.0.
Sure. Let's
see how it goes.